From the KTO Newsroom, I'm Jamie Deep. Thanks for tuning in. The state of Alaska is delaying construction on the first phase of a controversial ferry terminal proposed to connect Juneau and Haines due to a permitting issue. Work on the first phase of the Cascade Point Ferry Terminal project was originally planned for late summer. That would have entailed the construction of an access road, a new bridge, a gate, and an upland staging area, but not the ferry terminal itself. But the State Department of Transportation and Public Facilities said this week that the agency needs more time to work on its permit due to a change in direction from the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. In a notice, the agency said it will now postpone construction until after 2026. Initially, the Army Corps told DOT that it could apply for a permit with complete information about Stage 1 of the project and a draft design for Stage 2. The latter would entail the design and construction of the actual terminal. But DOT said in its notice that the Army Corps reversed course once it reviewed the initial application. Now, the permitting agency wants all design information about both stages before moving forward. The agency's notice said it is, quote, committed to honoring this permitting process, end quote. The notice added that DOT will begin the formal consultation process with tribes once the Army Corps says the permit application is ready. The move came a week before DOT was set to host town halls about the project, which has sparked opposition from lawmakers, local officials, and community members in Haines, Skagway, and Juneau. Critics say the new terminal would complicate rather than ease regional travel. The agency said it will hold public meetings at a later date. Alaska youth and advocates are calling on lawmakers to create a statewide fund for suicide prevention by charging a small fee on Alaskans' monthly phone bills. Advocates rallied on the steps of the Alaska State Capitol this afternoon, asking lawmakers to pass bills that they say would save lives. KTOO's Clarice Larson reports. In a note to listeners, this story mentions suicide and runs about 3 minutes and 25 seconds long.
988. It's the nation's suicide and crisis lifeline. It's the easy-to-remember number to call that was launched in 2022 to give immediate help and resources for people who are struggling with mental health issues, such as depression, substance use, and suicidal ideation. At the steps of the Alaska State Capitol on Thursday, advocates and youth gathered to speak about the importance of supporting suicide prevention measures like 988 in the state. According to the Alaska Department of Health, Alaska has the highest rates of youth suicide in the nation and the second highest rates of adult suicide. But statewide funding for prevention has been unreliable in the past.
I've traveled hundreds of miles to be here today because I want to be a voice for those I have lost to suicide.
That's 20-year-old Jacob Nikolai. He traveled all the way from the isolated village of Tuksuk Bay in the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta to speak at the rally with the Alaska chapter of the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention.
I've lost a couple people to suicide. It made me feel like my family was broken. Losing a loved one through suicide is hard. It can feel like a part of you is gone.
Nikolai and other youth were in Juneau specifically to advocate for House Bill 138 and Senate Bill 196, which were introduced in the Alaska legislature last session. The bills seek to establish a monthly surcharge for wireless and landline numbers in Alaska. The money generated from it would go toward creating a dedicated behavioral health crisis services fund for Alaska. The cost would be less than a dollar a month for individual users, but in turn, it's estimated to generate between $6 and $8 million annually to go toward enhancing the state's capacity to respond to mental health emergencies. The proposed surcharge would support critical prevention services like the 988 Suicide and Crisis Lifeline operations, which the state funds a portion of, along with mobile crisis teams and crisis stabilization centers in the state. Anchorage Democratic Representative Genevieve Mina sponsors the bill in the House. For her, supporting suicide prevention is extremely personal. Her father died by suicide when she was a child.
As a survivor of suicide loss, I didn't understand what he had been going through when I was a kid and why he had ended his life. I didn't understand why he never talked about it.
She says prioritizing suicide prevention and creating a sustainable funding source for resources in the state could save lives.
The most important thing is to talk about it. Talk saves lives. 988 saves lives. And supporting our crisis system saves lives. The way that we are currently funding that crisis system has been a patchwork. It's been unreliable.
Both House Bill 138 and Senate Bill 196 have yet to advance from committees, and it's unclear if they will have enough support to advance in the legislature this year. If you or someone you know is in crisis, the Suicide and Crisis Lifeline is available to call, text, or chat by dialing 988, or contact the Crisis Text Line by texting TALK to 741-741. You can be connected to community resources by calling 211. In Juneau, I'm Clarice Larson.
And the Juneau School District's Teachers Union voted to authorize a strike earlier this week amid ongoing contract negotiations. According to a press release from Juneau Education Association, more than 90% of the union's 265-person bargaining unit voted to authorize a strike. Kelly Harvey is a reading interventionist at Auk Bay Elementary School and the union's negotiation support co-chair. She says the vote lets the union strike, but doesn't guarantee it will happen.
The message of a strike authorization vote is just that. It authorizes us to take that next step. It does not mean that we are definitely doing that. But that's 92% is a huge percentage of our bargaining unit that is in favor of that at this point because of how negotiations have gone.
Negotiations have gone on for more than a year between the two parties. Throughout the negotiations process, Harvey says members have remained in favor of competitive wages, increasing contributions to health insurance, protecting prep time, and adding language addressing safety.
Those are the non-negotiables. We have to do better because we're losing teachers from the profession and from Juneau because they can't afford to be here. And we also need to be protected when we are here.
The district and JEA declared an impasse last year and are in arbitration now. A hearing is scheduled for late April. The authorization vote opens the door for the union to take the next steps to strike. In this case, the soonest those steps can happen, according to state regulation and law, is April 8th. That's the earliest a group within the union can make the decision to strike. The union would then need to give 72 hours notice to the district before any strike occurs. But Harvey says the hope is to come to an agreement with the district without needing to strike. In an emailed statement, a district representative said the district is committed to go through the negotiation process. She said, quote, "It is in the best interest of all parties to avoid any disruptions to students' education and school operations," end quote. The union is continuing to encourage the public to engage with the school board in negotiations through informational picketing, including one today at Overstreet Park and the intersection of Egan Drive that leads to Nugget Mall. Negotiations have resumed this past week, and another closed negotiation meeting is scheduled for tomorrow. And the Juneau Arts and Humanities Council has had new leadership for a few months now, and that has come with some changes. Maggie McMillan joined the arts agency as executive director in December. The JAC's operations manager retired shortly before that, so McMillan took over finances as well. She stepped into both roles at a time when arts organizations across the country are losing longstanding grants due to the Trump administration's sweeping federal funding cuts. McMillan says getting up to date on the organization's operations and finances has been overwhelming at times.
So it's been like drinking out of a fire hose. Every other week I switch between being an operations manager or an executive director. But the staff here fills my cup.
Prior to leading the JAC, McMillan was the Juneau Chamber of Commerce director for 3 years and worked in donor relations at Tlingit and Haida. Financial stability is vital for the JAC at this moment between funding losses on the federal and local level. McMillan also referred to inefficiencies she's found in the JAC's finances.
And I wonder if that has, you know, affected our ability to have very clear and like parent books that are easy to read right now. I do have a team of people working on it, helping us make it so we start our next fiscal year in a really great place. I'm good at numbers, and so for me to come in and have like this.
McMillan has already made some changes to stabilize the organization's finances, she says. One is reducing a full-time education director position to part-time at the end of the month. She says the grant that funded that role has ended. The JAC's education director coordinates a program that pays for students to attend local dance and theater performances, a program that brings artists to schools, and poetry out loud. McMillan says the organization is seeking other funding sources and collaborations so it can continue to provide those programs to youth in Juneau. The JAC has also closed the lobby shop in Centennial Hall, though the Davis Gallery will still have regular art showings. McMillan says the shop is redundant, with one inside the Juneau Arts and Culture Center just across the parking lot. She says closing the shop inside Centennial means ending 4 part-time positions. Though she says each of those employees had been working about 2 shifts a month, those calls were still hard to make. But McMillan says that's why she was hired, to make those tough financial decisions.
I'm good at numbers, and so for me to come in and have like this 10,000 foot view and look down and go, okay, these numbers don't make sense, so what do we do to keep as many people employed, but also stabilize our organization and also make smart decisions for a 54-year-old organization that wants to stay around for another 54 years?
McMillan says the Jack is planning a fundraising event this August, a 2-day summer arts festival with music, performances, and of course, art. And the state ferry, Lituya, will soon begin a 7-day-a-week ferry service between Ketchikan and Nanette Bay. It has been available just 5 days a week. The Alaska Marine Highway vessel serves as one of the 2 primary means of transportation between the 2 islands. Albert Smith is the mayor of the Metlakatla Indian community on Nanette Island, the only reservation in Alaska. He says the expanded ferry schedule will not only improve travel reliability for healthcare access and school trips, but also for work opportunities in Metlakatla.
They could catch the ferry in the morning coming from Ketchikan and go home at the end of the day. And it's a commute for them, but it's a reliable one that they can come over. It could help us get our projects done a lot faster.
According to the Alaska Department of Transportation and Public Facilities, the new ferry schedule could also increase tourism and small business activity on Nanette Island. DOT says the Lituya 7-day-a-week ferry service will begin at the end of March or early April. The Inter-Island Ferry Authority also provides transportation service between the 2 communities when the Lituya is up for repairs. This is KTOO. For more news, head to KTOO.org. Thanks for tuning in.